You're listening to Dropping the Gloves with former NHL All-Star John Scott, a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts and delivered by DoorDash.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining. Well, good afternoon now, Tim. We got a late start on this beautiful Monday morning. Thanks for joining us, everybody. I hope you had a good weekend. I know I did. It was nice, Tim. It was a nice weekend. We had some fun. The weather was great. We got outside. It was a nice weekend. What about you?
It was good. You know what I did? I did my in 3 or 4 years, the first World War II reenacting thing that I hadn't done since before I moved to Michigan. And we talked about it like a long time ago. Newer fans of the show probably don't know, but yeah, it was cool. Just about an hour away from me, big event. There was like an air show. There was a military, a gun show, all kind of stuff. 2,000 people there. And yeah, this new unit I joined had a little setup and weapons and uniforms and tents and all that. It was pretty cool.
So for those of you who don't know, let me fill in. Tim is a LARP. He LARPs World War II.
Reenactor. Different.
Well, how is it different?
LARPing is like, it's like role play and I don't know, fantasy stuff. It's not like reenacting is much more meticulous. It's very historical based. It's very accurate. And it's a way to like honor veterans. And it's not, I mean, there's certain, I don't know. It's a gray. There's an overlap probably, but it's not the same.
It's not the same. Okay. All right. Well, excuse me. It just seems like it's the same thing. You get dressed up and you pretend to fight. But anyways, it's all semantics, right, Tim? Who cares?
You know what? There are some, I'll be nice, some dorky people, some odd ducks in the hobby, if you can believe it. And it's hard to spend a whole day or a weekend with those guys sometimes.
The LARPing or the role play? Or what do you call yours?
Reenactors, yeah.
It's just, which ones has the geeks?
They probably both do. But yeah. It's just like when I did it with my college buddy, just like two history buffs, you know, back in Boston 5 years ago, 6 years ago. And it was cool to hang out with him and everything. And like, even like in around all the weird dudes, like I could still just, we could just do our own thing. But now he's back in Boston. I'm down here and there's no one to escape to with.
So how do you find this group? Do you just go on like reenactment webpage and say, hey, anybody around?
Basically. Yeah. I reached out to this group and looking for something in North Carolina. And a few people reached out to recruit me and I picked the one that I liked. So
which battle did you reenact from World War II?
This one wasn't a battle. This is called a living history. So you just like display everything and people come through all day and just sort of answer questions, show off a couple of little weapons demonstrations. It's just like traveling back in time for them, but there's no fighting at this one.
Do people ever get put off by your vast collection of German paraphernalia? How you seem to be focused and almost fascinated with the German side of everything and how much you like really appreciate some of that thing.
Come on. There's no German stuff there. Some events do, usually not the public ones, but it is a very touchy subject, especially the last couple of years. Like, For decades, that was a thing, reenacting different sides of like the Civil War and World War II, World War I, Vietnam, everything. And obviously anything Nazi stuff is a super, super touchy, sensitive subject that you got to be careful how you do if the public's going to be there. And there's ways to do it, I believe, that's okay without, you know, feeling like you're honoring Nazi Germany or anything. But some people might disagree with that.
I think it's important to just do the whole thing. It's like, if you're going to do a World War II, you have to obviously talk about the German perspective inside. And yes, right, at the end of the day, they lose. Rightfully so. Good for us. The good guys won. But you can't just ignore that it happened. You know,
you know what?
It's part of history.
And the guys, people have multiple like impressions and uniforms and everything that they do. And so no one really does just German. They'll have a few different American impressions based like Marine, Air Force, you know, paratrooper or whatever. And then they'll have a German unit that they do sometimes. And so it's not like they're looking for an outlet to dress up as a Nazi. It's just like a part of the historical living thing they do.
Well, yeah, nobody wants to be the bad guy in the battle. Someone's got to play it. You kind of just, yeah. Well, this time I'll be, you know, the Americans. Next time I'll be the Germans. You know, just one of those things.
Yeah, yeah. It's a little more complicated, but yeah, it's about right.
All right. Well, speaking of just enemies, right? Just teams, but countries that don't like each other, bad times. There was a,
When I'm fighting wars, I get hungry. And when I get hungry.
Well, I was going to segue into a couple of rivals that really have built up a good rivalry throughout the short tenure they've had in the NHL. And that's the San Jose Sharks and the Vegas Golden Knights. Not only are they geographically close, because San Jose is a hop, skip, and a jump from Vegas. I believe it's only a 4 or 5 hour car ride. They played each other to some heated playoff battles 4 or 5 years ago when Vegas entered the league. Gosh, 3 or 4 years ago, not that long ago. Well, they did it again a couple nights ago. They met up, and there was some playoff implications on the line. Not for the San Jose Sharks. They've been out of it for the last 2 months. The Knights, Tim. The Vegas Golden Knights. I can't seem to wrap my head around this team. I know we had a tweet from somebody who said they weren't going to listen to us because all we do is talk about the Knights. Well, guess what? They're one of the few teams that are in a playoff battle right now, and they've been in just a dramatic, drama-filled team this whole season. And how can you not talk about a team that's just constantly in the news? They acquire Jack Eichel. They have all this injuries. They have all these guys in the LTIR. Their goaltender's in and out of the lineup. It's just been a mess for the Vegas Golden Knights the whole season. Now they're scratching and clawing for a playoff berth when they should have been arguably the best team in the Western Conference. Well, they can't seem to get out of their own way. Like I said last week, they had their whole cavalcade of players. All the guys are back from the injury bug. Everybody's back. They play the San Jose Sharks. The San Jose Sharks are a bad hockey team at this point in the season. They have no business being there, but they have a rivalry. And they were getting jacked up for this game. What did Timo Meier say, Tim, before this game versus the Vegas Golden Knights? I thought it was pretty interesting.
Yeah, the game was on Sunday night last night, and he was asked on Saturday in a presser about, you know, the implications of this game, knowing that the Vegas is kind of in must-win mode, and they have been for a while. And Timo Meier, who hasn't been shy about being a vocal leader for the team and being outspoken against the Knights and how all these teams don't like him, he said they're intending to put, quote, all their energy into winning this game and spoiling the Vegas Golden Knights playoff chances, which is that's kind of represents the Sharks' feelings and how they approached last night's game.
He said it was the biggest game of the season. Like it was that important for these guys, for them to say in the media before the game that this was the biggest game of our season. And he had players from around the league texting him and prompting him and encouraging him and reaching out, which to me is unbelievable because the NHL, it's a small, tight-knit community. There's only 700 players in the league. Everybody, you know, for the most part, is friendly. You want the best for everybody. You don't want anybody to get hurt. You don't really root against other teams. Yes, if I play for the Dallas Stars or the Nashville Predators or other teams around the league, I don't want Vegas to win. But if I am in the league, I'm not texting another player on another team saying, hey, I need this one. Come on, let's go. Let's go. We really need you to beat Vegas so we can get to the playoffs. Maybe I would text a guy from San Jose like I've done. I've done it the last few years. Like, hey, good luck tonight. Big game. Hope you guys get the W. I really don't like the Oilers, or I don't like the Leafs, or I don't like the Hurricanes, or whoever it might be. He was getting text messages from guys on other teams saying, we really want you to beat the Vegas Golden Knights tonight. That to me just speaks volumes of really how much nobody likes the Vegas Golden Knights. And it's not a player. It's not this. It's not that. It's the organization as a whole. To me, it's how they do their business, how they go about as a team, how they carry themselves. And for a team to get that type of reputation in only 5 years of existence, that's not a good look. It's not good at all. Like you want to be well-liked by other players. You want to be a destination for a player, as an organization for players. And if you're getting guys to be like, hey, I hope you kill these guys. We don't like them. That's not a good look, Tim. What did you think when you heard this? Because it, to me, it's just blows my mind.
Well, it's not only that, like, they've only been in existence for a few years and everyone hates them already. The first year, they were the darling of the league and in the sports world. Like, everyone loved them. Everyone was rooting for them unless you were playing them. Like, this is the team that everyone could get behind. It was the land of misfit toys, and they went on that playoff run, the Stanley Cup final. Like, it was awesome. And how quickly they came crashing down speaks to – I think it's a mix of a few different things. It's the personalities on the team. There are some players there that maybe guys don't love. And then it's also what the organization has done. And this is probably the bigger one, and the way that they've treated players and the way that they've some of the moves they made. And certainly the biggest one is releasing Marc-Andre Fleury right after he wins his Vezina trophy. And he finds out via Twitter, like, it was just all of these poor, and there were more before that too, just poorly handled situation by the ownership and leadership groups. And the players, it's easy to root against them now.
Well, even going back to the expansion draft, there's stories that are known that the GM made deals with other GMs and then just went against his word and just kind of went rogue and did whatever he wanted to do, or he would have a deal with this guy and then he backed out and then took a player who the GM thought maybe was untouchable, like a Jonathan Huberdeau. Or, sorry, not a Jonathan Huberdeau, a Jonathan Marchessault.
Marchessault. Yeah.
So there were, you know, some things that maybe didn't sit well with GMs and players. And then you have the whole Yevgeny Dadonov situation this season where you try to trade him, and rightfully so. You probably know you can't trade him, but you try to go ahead and pull a fast one in the NHL. You said the Marc-Andre Fleury thing, and he is loved in the NHL. Like, across the board, there's not one player that I've met or heard of or talked to that has anything but great things to say about Marc-Andre Fleury. And for you to do him dirty like that and to just disrespect a future first ballot Hall of Famer, a guy who just won you a Vezina, that's just, it's a little bit slimy. And now it appears they're not on good footing with their starting goaltender, Robin Lehner. And we all know Robin Lehner's history. We all know he battles with mental issues. He's been well, you know, documented. He's very vocal about that. He's upfront about that. Apparently, allegedly, he had a knee injury March 8th. He's been playing through the injury. He's been, you know, fighting through it. He's played some games. He's been some healthy scratches, doing maintenance on his knee. There was some issues. He wasn't happy with the organization because Robin is a very private person when he wants to be. This is all allegedly. This is all what I'm hearing. And he was upset that all of this medical stuff was being filtered out to the media, where he's like, hey man, this is my personal information. I don't want this getting out there. Can you guys please keep it under wraps? And stuff kept trickling out. He's not happy with it. So the last straw was, he was playing a game last week. After the first period, he got pulled by DeBoer for whatever reason. And he's like, fine, you know what? You guys want to play this game with me? I'm going to get the surgery. I'm done. I'm not playing again. I'm just going to go and get my knees hurt. I don't have to injure it more. I'm just going to go and get the surgery. Some things happen. They talked to the Knights. DeBoer was saying he's not going to get the surgery. All of a sudden, he's the backup goaltender last night during this crucial game with the San Jose Sharks. So that's the drama that we're talking about with the Vegas Golden Knights. So this game, we'll fast forward to last night. They're up 4-2. They're in a great situation. This is a must-win game for them. And they need to win this game to even have a chance to make the playoffs. They're still, at this time, they're still 3 points back of the Dallas Stars, and this is their game that they had in hand. Sorry, they're 4 points back. 4-2, San Jose Sharks, do or die, 2.5 minutes left, pull their goaltender. Nick Bedino scores a weak goal on Logan Thompson. Like, just an absolute muffin from the point, not really a screen. I know Timo Meier took a swing at the puck, didn't even hit it. It just goes through Thompson. I don't know if he was expecting a tip and playing the deflection, but whatever the case, 4-3. They pull the goalie again. Pressure. Burns knocks the puck down at the blue line. Takes a shot. I can't believe we're talking about a game like this. Good play by Burns to knock it down.
Great quick play. Shot. Really good play.
Quick shot on net. Again, a savable shot that should never have had a rebound. Yes, there's a little bit of traffic, but if you're an NHL goaltender, you have to swallow that puck and you have to be sticky. There should be no rebound on this play. He leaks the puck out. Timo Meier's sitting right there. He shoots the puck in. There's like 0.7 seconds on the clock. San Jose goes wild. Timo is mocking the Vegas Golden Knights bench. He's whooping it up. They go to a shootout. Obviously, San Jose wins. Vegas, their playoff hopes are all but just done. They have 3 games left. They play the Dallas Stars on Tuesday. This will be a massive game. So they can win this game versus Dallas and pull within 1 point with 2 games left and potentially come back. But the way they've been playing, the fact that Robin Lehner is not around, this is a heartbreaker. You have to get another point out of this game to just even have a chance for the playoffs. Now they're behind the eight ball. What did you think of this whole thing, Tim? It was quite the game for a team that's been out of the playoffs since January to upset a team that needs to win this game.
Oh, it was a great game. I caught the beginning of it. I ended up going to bed and I saw what happened this morning, and Pete Blackburn on Twitter posted, I couldn't have said it better. He's like, there's no funnier way for the Vegas Golden Knights season to end than what just happened in this game. Not just like, it's the whole story. Like the fact that Meyer was saying that the day before and the night of, and then to come back and win. And this other part of this, we haven't really touched on yet, but we talked about it in other episodes. Jack Eichel, for the fourth game in a row, puts up no points. And in those four games, with the playoff implications on the line, they need their best guys to be their best guys. 0 points, 10 total shots in those four games, is a minus two. And adding insult to injury, you get the shootout attempt last night in the game against the Sharks, doesn't even score. It's just it couldn't be written better.
It's the chef's kiss after the meal. It's like, what a beautiful dinner. Mwah! 0 points.
My compliments. Dash two.
It's just embarrassing. I'm going to Buffalo on Friday. I'm going to see, they're doing a big going away thing for Rick Jeanneret. It's the last game of the season, so they wanted to fly in some alumni who the fans like. And I'm lucky enough to be one of those alumni who still have a good relationship with Buffalo. So I'll go in, I'll sign some autographs, I'll throw some t-shirts around and say goodbye to RJ, who is an institution in Toronto. He is the better Buffalo, more polished version of Jack Edwards. Like, he's the opposite world. It's like the George Costanza, but Jack Edwards is the bad George and RJ is the good George. So I'm going to go there, say goodbye to RJ. And I just want to pick everyone's brain. I want to talk to fans. I want to talk to the players. I want to talk to Peyton Krebs and Alex Tuck. How sweet it is that Jack Eichel has just been an epic flop for the Vegas Golden Knights, for a guy that they paid so much for a guy that just caused so much hoopla in the offseason and just caused just so many waves. He's absolutely flopped with the Vegas Golden Knights. They have the same record. Almost. I think Buffalo might have a slightly better record than the Vegas Golden Knights since the trade. Isn't that remarkable to you? Like, that is remarkable to me. Like, even without Jack Eichel, Vegas has a vastly better team than Buffalo Sabres. And they still have the same record. And Vegas plays in the worst division in hockey. So they get all these cupcake matchups versus San Jose, versus Arizona, versus all these bad teams in the Pacific Division. Like, Buffalo has to play some good teams in the East. So it's going to be sweet. It's going to be very, very sweet.
I saw another good tweet that compared Eichel to like he's a superstar in name only, a la Jake Cutler, where like his reputation for being a star is so different from what he's actually doing on the field, on the ice.
When you look at his stats and you really give it a good look, he really is. He had one good season where he had 82 points in 77 games. And I guess the next season he had 78 and 68. Other than those two seasons, he's been very pedestrian. Yeah, he's been a good player. Not quite a point per game the other three seasons, but very pedestrian. Nothing to like write home about. Not something you want to throw $10 million at a guy and build your franchise around him and say, you're my guy. Yes, like, he's a really good player. But to think that he was drafted just one pick after Connor McDavid and there was almost some thoughts that he was as good as Connor McDavid, it's crazy. They're not even in the same category. Not even in the same category.
Everyone was talking about, like, in any other year, he's the number one overall pick. Like, go back 4 years, 5 years, go forward 5 years. Like, he is a generational talent that just happened to be stuck behind McDavid and is not looking like that anymore.
No, and then the broader point with Vegas, we talked about it a couple weeks ago. Where do you go from here? Like, I was hoping they were going to squeak into the playoffs, but that, barring a complete just collapse by the Dallas Stars, like barring a complete just like, we are going to completely bungle, even if they lose the game versus the Knights, they play the Coyotes on Wednesday and they play the Ducks on Friday, two winnable games versus teams that they should win. So even if they lose those two games, they should make it into the playoffs. That begs the question, where do you go from here with the Vegas Golden Knights? Your starting goaltender wants out. He's had nothing but problems since he's been there. He's signed for 3 more years at $5 million. He's had a barrage of injuries the last few years. Who's going to want to take Robin Lehner? And then you have to look at their roster. Who do we remove? Who do we keep? We still have Dadonov for another season. He knows we don't want him to be here. We still got like all these guys under contract. We got a couple RFAs we have to take care of. I don't want to get into it now, but they are in big, big trouble. This was their year, because it's not going to look pretty next year when you try to fit everything under the cap. It really is not. So we'll get into this at a later date, but boy, from a team that was just a Cinderella story 3-4 years ago to where we are now, it's quite the progression and fall from grace for the Vegas Golden Knights. It really is. You have to work hard as a GM, as a head coach, to just scuttle your team this quickly in such a short amount of time, to go from the Stanley Cup Finals, to go from just the darling of the NHL. Now everybody hates you and you're going to miss the playoffs.
That's the part that's hard to measure, is like all this reputational stuff and this, you know, the way they treat their players. I think it's going to hurt them in ways that we don't really necessarily recognize yet. Or maybe I could be wrong, but like you said, who's going to want to go there? What goalie is going to want to go there? Like, it's just, I think this is going to continue, even if, despite the fact that they're faltering and missing the playoffs, most likely there's all these other like unquantifiable things going on that makes this not a desirable location and not a fun team to root for.
No, not at all. And it's going to bite them in the behind. There's some good UFAs coming up this offseason. There's a couple from Calgary, Johnny Gaudreau, Matthew Tkachuk. There's a Brock Besser. There's a lot of good players. Clodger, he's older. Yes, there's Malkin, there's Giroux, there's Patrick Laine, there's Chris Letang, Marc-Andre Fleury. I'm talking about younger players who you can
see. Laine is like 23, though. You forget.
He's 24. I would not want to build my team around Patrick Laine.
Yeah.
No way, no how. He has done nothing but just throw question marks at his career and his ability ever since he's entered the league. He had his one good first year where he came out of the gate. Ever since then, he's such a streaky player where he'll score 20 goals in 10 games. Then he'll just disappear for a month and a half, and you don't know where he's gone or where he's going to be. So I am not going to build my team about a Patrick Laine. But like the other guys I said, a Matthew Tkachuk I would build my team around. But Johnny Gaudreau is still only 28 years old. He's got a lot of hockey left in him. Philip Forsberg is only 27 years old. You got a Brock Besser. He's a bona fide goal scorer. These are the guys who teams are clamoring for. And if I'm a player like this, and I get to pick and choose my team that I want to go to, and one of those teams is the Golden Knights, it's like, why would I want to go there when I see how they treat their star players, when I see how they treat a guy who just won the Vezina for them? There's no chance that you're going to go there when you have an opportunity to go to another organization who has a proven track record of paying their players, treating them right, and doing them, you know, good when they want to leave, or there's a contract dispute or something like that. So once you get that label, until you get your GM out of there, your coach out of there, and change the culture, you're handcuffed. And there are teams that have that reputation around the league, and teams just don't want to go play for those guys. So it's something that they paint themselves in this corner, and they're just going to have to live with the ramifications of that for the next few years. So good for the Vegas Golden Knights.
And you know, they would have absolutely been in on the Evander Kane thing if the Sharks weren't in the same division as them, because there's no way the Sharks would send him to Vegas. But that's exactly the player they would have gone after if they could have.
Oh, Evander spends most of his time in Vegas. It'd be a perfect fit. He wouldn't even have to buy a house. The hotels would have comped him one. It would have been a fantastic fit. It would really, really would have been good. He would have had to pay up front, because I think there's been some history of him not maybe paying bills at the hotels. But, you know, give him a little down payment, and then, you know, we'll go from there. He could just send his checks. We're getting ahead of ourselves. You know what happens when I go to Vegas? I get hungry. And, you know, there are a couple restaurants there, but I like to stay in my room. The rooms are fantastic. The views are great. I order DoorDash, Tim. Is that what you do when you're in Vegas? You get DoorDash?
Sure do. Every time.
It's every time. It's a no-brainer. So you can do that too. The next time you go to Vegas and you got a big pile of chips surrounding you, just order DoorDash. You don't have to leave your room at all. It's fantastic. Use promo code GlovesDDUS. GlovesDD if you're in Canada. Get 25% off and free delivery. Get yourself some food. It's a fantastic company. You can get food in your belly very quickly, and you get a discount to boot because you're using our promo code GlovesDDUS if you're in the USA, and GlovesDD if you're just in Canada. All right, moving on. Some concerning news, Tim, from an Eastern Conference Stanley Cup contender. The Carolina Hurricanes, a team that I think, you know, really dropped the ball at the trade deadline. They brought in Max Domi, who has done well. He's played okay, but he's not necessarily lighting the world on fire, making a huge impact like a Claude Giroux or Ben Chiarot or a cop for the New York Rangers. These guys are really kind of putting their stamp on that team. They got some big injury news. Freddie Anderson went down with an injury last week. he was their starting goaltender. He's had a great season, really, really playing well for the Carolina Hurricanes. Their backup, Antti Raanta, hurt himself last game versus the New Jersey Devils. So in a span of a week and a half, they have lost both of their starting goaltenders. And these two guys were splitting time. They're good goaltenders. Any one of those guys I would be confident with going into the playoffs just based on Carolina's defense. They have a lockdown, very responsible forward core. They're very well coached defensively. When you throw a rookie goaltender out there, I know they have this guy. I don't know if he's from the KHL or wherever he's from, but he has some pro experience. He's only played two NHL games to date. Do you feel confident going into the playoffs if you're the Carolina Hurricanes, you're the number two seed in the East, you're most likely going to line up with your Boston Bruins? Are you hitting the panic button now? Are you nervous that you're going to be ousted in the first round because you don't have a goaltender?
Well, so what's the timeline on either of these guys? Will they be back? Do we know?
Rod Brind'Amour typically keeps things close to his vest. Same with the GM there. So nobody knows. Nobody knows the timeline. Nobody knows what's going to happen. Brind'Amour said, we're just going to play it day to day. We don't know what's going to happen. So I don't know. The Antti Raanta play looked really, really bad. It's a non-contact injury. He just kind of hyperextended his right leg, reaching for a puck, controlled the rebound, made the save. It was versus the Islanders, excuse me, not the Devils. He just kind of hyperextended his right pad. Just a very innocuous play, shot from the point, nothing really serious, no players around. Those plays are the ones that make me nervous because you're not getting hit. No, you're not having someone lean on you. Your leg gives out. He tried to come back and play it a little more, and he's like, I can't do it. I've seen that. I've been around a goalie who's had that injury. It usually ends bad. Hopefully it's not. Hopefully he's back. They have a big game tomorrow versus the New York Rangers that does have playoff implications. The Rangers are right behind him in the standings. They have a game in hand. So there is a potential of the Rangers to pass the Hurricanes. And then if you're the Hurricanes, you have to line up and play Pittsburgh in the first round, which nobody wants to do. Nobody wants to play Boston, but I would say nobody wants to play the Pittsburgh Penguins even more so. So I don't know. If I'm a fan of the Hurricanes, I'm very nervous right now. Very, very nervous. Their top scorers have been playing okay. Their defense is just incredible, like I've said. Their third line has been out of this world. They remind me of the HBK line. It's Stahl, it's Nito Ryder, and it's, gosh, I can't remember who the third line is. They're just bigger. They get in on the forecheck. They create turnovers. They've been scoring really well, and they're just a dangerous third line in the playoffs. So I like their team. It's Jesper Fast. That's who it is. Excuse me. But, yeah, without a goaltender, Tim, I don't see Carolina getting out of the first round.
Yeah, well, anyway, you slice it, and they're probably most likely statistically they'll keep their spot and they'll get first in the Metro and they'll play Boston, and that's a tough matchup. It's not an easy matchup for either of those teams. I'm not saying without a goalie, the Boston's going to walk all over them, but this is not. Gosh, even with Freddie, I don't even know how confident I am in this team. I don't know. I know you kind of feel the same way. There's something about the Carolina Hurricanes that just you're not ready to buy in just yet, and without a goalie, even more so.
But I feel comfortable with them in the first round with the Freddie Anderson. He's had a great season. He's got a 217 goals against average, his 922 save percentage. He's having a good season. You know what I mean? He's a guy who can get me by the Bruins.
He doesn't do well against the Bruins.
Well, when he's with the Leafs, the Hurricanes have one of, if not the best defensive team in the NHL. Their top six D-men are really, really good. They're really responsible. Brady Shea, Brett Pesce, they're so good. And their forwards, they take chances when they need to, but they're very responsible. Sebastian Aho, he's widely known as being one of the best two-way forwards in the league. So I like the way this team's set up. I think they would have breezed by the Bruins maybe in five, but without Freddie Anderson, I don't know, Tim. And then all of a sudden, if you're the Boston Bruins, you're looking at the way the brackets are being set up, and it's like, hold on a second. We could play the Hurricanes without their two starting goaltenders in the first round. Then after we get by them, if we get by them, we're going to play the Rangers or the Penguins. That's not bad. That's not a bad path to the Eastern Conference Finals. In contrast, if you're the Toronto Maple Leafs, Tampa Bay Lightning, or the Florida Panthers, you guys have to just beat each other up in the first and second round to get to the Eastern Conference Finals. So things could be worse for the Bruins. They really could be worse, but tough luck for the Carolina Hurricanes.
Well, think about what that means too. Like, you know, Tampa's is 3 points ahead of the Bruins, same amount of games played. They're most likely, you know, barring anything crazy, going to stay there. And their reward for having a better season is playing Toronto in the first round and then Florida in the second round if they're able to beat Toronto. Like, how, it's crazy how that works out. Do you think that's an indicator? I know some people don't love the bracket system now. The playoff system, is it broken? Is this fair that this is the reality? Or this just sort of that's the way she goes sometimes?
It's just it ebbs and flows every single season. Sometimes it's fair, sometimes it's not. This year it's not going to be fair. It happened. I predicted it 2 weeks ago. Every team in the Eastern Conference has 100 points. First time in history. It's remarkable that it kind of worked out this way. Every team in the top eight has 100 points. The next closest after Washington, who has 100, is the Islanders, who have 80. That 20-point gap is insane. Like, usually you have teams, you know, 80, 89, 90, 96, a team that maybe played well at the beginning of the season and faltered or this and that. 20 points is a huge chasm when it comes to points in an NHL season. That's unheard of. So it's just one of these seasons where you're going to get a hard matchup in the second round regardless. The first round is going to be a hard matchup. So what are you going to do? The Rangers are going to end up playing Carolina in the second round, who has 112 points, so they're going to end up playing the Washington Capitals. So every team in this division is dangerous, Tim. There's no way around it. Yeah, I don't know. I don't mind the playoff format. It is what it is. You either have to go re-rank all 16 teams when the season's over, or you just leave it as is. It is what it is. What are you going to do? All right, we got a funny Twitter question, Tim. What was that?
Well, I asked a question last night on Twitter and Instagram about describing a player who's just like a mediocre average player, but always seems to do well against your own team. Like, all of a sudden, like every time we play Montreal and Brendan Gallagher, suddenly Wayne Gretzky, right? And we got some really funny responses, and most of them were like related to, if you're a rookie making your NHL debut, you're going to score two goals against our team. That's just how it always happens. Or if you're a backup, you know, a goalie or an AHL goalie getting called up, you're going to get a shutout against our team in your debut. That's just the way it goes. That's some really funny stories. Some like in specific players too. It was some really clever responses there.
Wow. Great one, Tim. I wish we would have had some examples, but no, I guess not. All right, we're going to do some quick hits here, unless you have a few examples. I don't know.
I thought it was funny. I can give specific examples, but I don't know. That's not going to relate to everyone's team. Jamie Langenbrunner came up a bunch. Brendan Lemieux came up a bunch. I said Alexei Yemelin, when he was playing defense for the Canadiens. He was like a wrecking ball out there. I never wanted to play him, but he never like put up any points, never did much, but I don't know. Maybe it was funnier on social media. You had to be there, John.
You had to be there.
You either get it or you don't.
Did you see Petrie's hit versus Bergeron?
Yeah. Yep.
What'd you think of that?
I was fine with it. Yeah, I was fine.
You weren't up in arms like all the Bruins fans? Ah, how dare you hit Bergeron?
No, I mean, I understand why Marchand defended him too. But the hit was clean. I was good with it.
All right, let's get to some quick hits. We had another franchise record, Tim.
Another.
I will say this. This season has set a record for the amount of records set. It's an amazing record to get. Kyle Connor got his 45th goal, franchise record. Surprising you, 45th goal to be a franchise record with some of the players that have been through that. It's since they've the second incarnation of the Winnipeg Jets. It's not the initial one because you got Timo Solani, who's 76.
Right.
You have other high goal scorers, Dale Howard-Chuck. So it's the second incarnation of the Winnipeg Jets. Wait.
But does that include Atlanta, though? Because surely Kovalchuk had more than that, right?
I think it's the second incarnation of the Jets.
In 6 years, whatever
yes.
it's been. Okay.
So it's still a record. It's still a great record. Because you would have thought Patrick Laine had maybe gotten a few goals, or a Wheeler, or a Shifley. A guy like that had scratched 50 goals, but I guess not. So it's a big day. We got to talk about another franchise record.
Kovalchuk had 50 goals twice for Atlanta, so yeah, it doesn't include that.
No, and it doesn't include the goals before they went to Atlanta. So it's kind of a hollow record, but all in all, it's still a record. Getzlaf played his last NHL game. First ballot Hall of Famer, Tim. Hall or not, remember we used to do that?
Yeah, we did him. He's not a Hall of Famer.
No?
No. He's never had 100 points, never won any major trophies. He won the cup, obviously, but he's never been the best player in the league, even for a single season. And so he's a very good player. His number will be retired, but no, not a Hall of Famer. Retired in Anaheim.
Yeah. I guess he's not getting your vote. So there's that. Pretty good career, though. Pretty good last game. See his spinning assist pretty nice.
Oh, yeah. Beautiful.
Very good. All right. Some concern in Washington, maybe. Also, Ovechkin gets injured chasing a puck versus the Leafs, crashes into Call Green, back into the end boards. Is he okay, Tim? You're a Washington insider. Is everything okay there with Ovi?
Yeah. Everyone's telling me the same thing. It's a shoulder injury. It's day-to-day. They're pretty zipped up, especially with the playoffs approaching, but not too concerning. They expect him back. I wouldn't be surprised if he sits out a game or two to end the season.
See, I don't think he's going to sit out. I think they still have the potential to get into that first wild card spot to just avoid the Florida Panthers. I don't think he's going to sit out unless they're mathematically eliminated from getting out of that last wild card spot. I don't think anybody wants to play the Panthers. They're just very, very strong. So I think he's going to be back. I think he's a very just versatile player. He plays through. TJ Oshie said he's the toughest guy he's ever played with. He missed a couple games for COVID this year. Other than that, he's like, guy plays every single game.
Their last three games, they play the Islanders twice and the Rangers once.
Yep.
So that's a pretty good schedule that works in their favor. And they could easily get, 4 or 5 points there. And the Bruins play Florida, Toronto, and Buffalo. So it's possible.
Boy, oh boy. The possibilities there for the Capitals to jump into that second wildcard spot. That would be however you want to look at it. But that's a big one, Tim. This jockeying for positions is in the East Coast is real. Nobody wants to line up with the Carolina or the Florida Panthers. And sadly enough for the Toronto Maple Leafs, nobody wants to line up with the Tampa Bay Lightning. They just waxed the Florida Panthers the other night. It was a dominant game by the Tampa Bay Lightning. Florida waxed Tampa Bay. I can't remember what happened. No, Tampa Bay beat Florida. They outplayed them.
Yeah.
8-4, right? It was a great game. So, all right, moving on. Did you see the Kuznetsov goal in the shootout versus Toronto?
Yeah, I did.
What did you think of that? What did you think of the hot dog? It's like he was celebrating before the goal. He pushes the puck slightly in front of him, goes around the world with his stick 3 or 4 times, lacrosse style, calmly picks up the puck again, goes in nice and slow, and just goes around Colgren. What did you like that? You probably loved it.
I'm not a Kuznetsov guy. I just never really have been. I don't really have a problem with it. It does come across as pretty cocky, but that's the kind of like that's if somehow these teams were to meet again in the playoffs, which they won't because Washington can't, there's no way. But if they were, that's like the kind of thing he's going to have to answer for again.
I feel like that move should be illegal. The going in and not taking a stride and just slowly going in. The goaltender is at such a disadvantage because you still have to defend the shot. And the further back you go in your net, you're giving up more net and you can't play out and be aggressive because the guy's going so slow. You can't match his speed. He's at such a disadvantage when you just go in that slow, especially when you have good hands. Yes, it might not be good for a player like me because I don't have the hand quickness to backhand, forehand, and then quickly go to my backhand upstairs. But for the majority of people in the NHL, you can pull off that move. And the poor goalies, they're at the mercy of just the referee and the player. I feel bad for him. The only defense on that is to just pop out a poke check. But even then, the player is so good, their head's up the whole time. If you do the poke check, he's just going to goal, empty net, move it from one side to the other. I wish they would make a rule where you have to keep a certain pace or you have to just keep your legs moving or you just have to be moving. You can't just almost slow to a complete stop. It just, to me, it's not even a shootout. It's just a guy coming in and waiting till he gets in close and just, I don't know. I don't like it. It's not indicative of a play that was going to happen during the game. I know when you get a breakaway, you have to keep skating. During the shootout, I think the anticipation was it's going to be like a breakaway. I don't know. It's not a hockey play. I don't like the shootout. I don't.
Did you see Eric Halla's, what do they call it? The when you get tripped on a breakaway and you get a penalty shot.
You're killing it today, Tim.
Oh, yeah.
It's a Monday. It's okay.
Did you see it?
I did not.
Questionable penalty. Hoffman kind of back-checked him and maybe a penalty. I can make an argument either way, but Holla gets a penalty shot and he skated and didn't touch the puck and then like skated past it, had to come back and pull it. And the refs allowed it and they watched it again. They allowed it because he didn't touch the puck, which you're allowed to do, but it was pretty ugly. And then he went in and scored and Montreal fans, understandably were pretty upset about it.
So he
it up now.
Did whiff on it, didn't he?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. So yeah, if he would have touched it just 1 millimeter, he would not have been able to get it because it would have gone.
Marshawn did that a couple of years ago. Remember?
Yeah. Yeah. What? Boy, oh boy. Hey, it's the rules. What are you going to do? But yeah, the Bruins just get all the breaks. All right. One more thing. Marc-Andre Fleury just broke another record. Another record, Tim. Can you believe this? We started the quick hits with a record. We're going to end it with a record. He broke his own record. Most consecutive appearances in the playoffs by a goaltender. He was at 15. Now he's at 16. The amazing thing with this is he hasn't done it with one team. He's bounced around. He went from Pittsburgh. He went to Vegas. Now he's with the Minnesota Wild. So it's kind of cool. You know, he's doing it with multiple teams over multiple years. He's having a great record with the Wild since he's been there. He's 6-1, .921 save percentage. He should be their starting goaltender in the playoffs.
The Wild and St. Louis Blues is going to be such a good first-round matchup.
Must watch
on TV. I change my mind every day on who I pick in that series. It's crazy.
Who do you got now? They're both the hottest teams in the NHL. The last 10 games, I think they both are undefeated. Who would you take? Yeah. The St. Louis Blues are 9-0-1 in their last 10. Minnesota Wild is 8-0-2 in their last 10. That's remarkable. It's and then don't look now. The Avalanche, they look human. They do not look good. Their recent stretch of games, they've lost 4 in a row. They look very, very human. The Western Conference, Tim, could be up for grabs. Who do you got? Minnesota or St. Louis right now? Lock it in.
St. Louis, but I reserve the right to change that later on.
You're the worst. Friend of the show, Marcus Foligno. How could you betray him like that? He listens. He's a very consistent listener. He's a friend of the show. How about
future friend of the show, David Perron, right?
No, never. Never friend of the show. There's a few non-negotiable people I will not have on the show. It's one of them. Him and Tom Sestito, the only two. All right, Tim, finish us off. We had a good Friday for points bet. We made some people some do-re-mi. There's a lot of – let's do Tuesday's games because I don't like today's games. I don't think there's any, like, very big playoff implications. It's just the Flyers and the Hawks. Let's get to the Tuesday's games. There's some big, big games. Like we mentioned before, we got the Vegas Golden Knights and the Dallas Stars. Then we got the Flames and the Predators, the Coyotes and the Wild. And then we also have the Hurricanes and the Rangers. So let's just pick a couple. Let's do it. Go to PointsBet. There's no promo code. Everybody can do it. Who do we got, Tim?
All right, let's start with Carolina and the New York Rangers. I like the Rangers in that game.
Yeah, what me too. That's a no-brainer. Shesterkin's probably going to get another shutout. He probably get two shutouts. He's so good. All right, who do we got? The Stars and the Knights. This is the big one. This is a huge
game. This is the big one. I really think Dallas is gonna lock it down. I think they're going to win this one.
I hope so. Friend of the show, Joe Pavelski, is going to be playing in that game. Really, really hope they lock it down. Let's just finish off with the Blues and the Avalanche, a potential Western Conference final matchup. Who do you got for the Blues and the Avalanche?
This is making me think of Toronto-Tampa Bay from last week, and one of these teams is going to try to send a message. I don't think we have like an 8-1 drumming like we did. I'm going to say St. Louis.
St. Louis. Okay. I like that. Well, there's your picks, everybody. Get over to PointsBet, lock those in, and we will talk to everybody on a Wednesday. Hope you have a good week so far. Cheers, everybody.
Thanks for listening to Dropping the Gloves with John Scott, a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode. Delivered by DoorDash.